I've never been closer to anyone, and I don't know you at all. David, is there something wrong with you?
You make me out to be this person that you think that I am. I'm not this person.
Why would you give up everything just because of him?
Welcome to a very special one-off. I wouldn't even call it a full episode, but
John.0
recap. Tonight was the premiere of the finale of the HBO documentary series, The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, a very white guy, and myself, Leslie Mack, have just finished watching it. And
I was shaking.
First of all, I was really nervous going into the show because news had broken earlier today, or actually yesterday, that Robert Durst was arrested by Los Angeles County Police on Friday. So
ostensibly related to Susan Berman's death.
Correct. And so right away, I was very apprehensive about watching the show just because Andrew Jarecki, and I will have to say, I don't even know how many kudos I can hand out to Andrew Jarecki for the job he did with the crafting of the series and the way he had to, you know, personally handle himself in this final episode and final encounter with ostensibly a mass murderer or a serial killer.
He's a sociopath. And he's a murderer.
He's a serial killer.
But the, you know, we've talked at length about him throughout the last five episodes of this show and on our podcast every week. And I really, we've talked about him being very weird and just, you know, he comes off as sort of a very, just like a sociopath. He really has been coming off as a sociopath. Tonight though, I mean,
tonight the rails came off.
I honestly,
tonight was the first interview they did with him where he didn't give the appearance that he felt like he was in control.
You're right,
and it also was a glimpse into a moment where you can see him killing someone. And I don't want to say you couldn't see that before because he was creepy, he was all those things. But he also, you know, he came off as though you could have a rational conversation with him at the same time. And I could see, you could see Andrew, who spent all these hours with this man, talking on the phone, talking to him in these interviews, talking to him one-on-one, learning about him. And you could see him not being concerned being around him.
Well, he said it. Jarecki said he was telling people that he wasn't afraid.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid. And then he paused. He goes, well, but now I'm going to potentially be the enemy.
No, he said, I'm going in there to identify myself as the enemy.
And he did. He took him down, right? Because he's now under arrest for Berman's death. And this film, the thing that he did when they were – and I thought it was a fascinating glimpse into the production of this moment that they were building for. And they hadn't shown you so much of the behind the scenes, like his preparation. Like, oh, am I going to ask him like this? Am I going to ask him like that? If I have this thing that is the sort of the gotcha moment, the two addresses, if it's out and he's a smart fucker and he scans down and sees it, I might lose it before. So I have to, they really worked at how Jarecki was going to lead this interview. And I thought that was tremendous. But when they were prepping about it, they said number one is preserving the ability for justice to be
served. They did not want to do anything that would jeopardize any potential legal action that was going to be able to be taken. And the first person they show them showing the envelopes to is his lawyer. One of the first people is his lawyer. And the lawyer's face, and the lawyer even mentions in this episode, he's like, I told Bob not to do this documentary series.
It'll piss somebody off.
He said, I told him that I realize you want to get your story out there, but understand that you're going to piss people off and that there are a lot of people that do not have your liberty
in mind. Yeah. They're not looking out for your
liberty. They're not trying to make sure that you're free and clear.
Yeah. And that when he showed the lawyer, I you couldn't even script it better. The lawyer, you're talking about a really, really high paid, skilled, like at the top of his craft as a lawyer. And he's looking at essentially evidence that convicts his client in a damning way, and he didn't even lift his head.
Nope.
He stared at it and contemplated it for the longest period of time, and then his words were the most measured
.
And it just was like, wow. And he basically said, you know, this looks awful similar. You know, I'm not a handwriting expert.
He says, I'm not a handwriting expert, so anything I could say wouldn't be of any merit. But I see some similarities and I see some differences. That's what his lawyer should say.
Yeah.
Not just a good lawyer. Bob's lawyer should say that.
Has to say that.
I mean, he's not going to lie and perjure himself.
But he has to be the best lawyer for his client.
So that part, the thing is, prior to tonight, I would say there's been a few instances on the show that I found jarring for myself. One was when they confronted him about why he lied about going to have a beer at the mayor's house after allegedly dropping Kathy off at the train station. I thought that was a moment where he was clearly having to explain a lie he told, and he scratched his head when he was talking. Oh, I just said it. I thought it would be more believable. Scratch, scratch, scratch. The second time was when he talked about why he dismembered his neighbor.
And we talked about that on the show. That was so, again, sociopathically cold isn't even the right. It was like beyond blunt and matter of fact. He was describing cutting a man in pieces as if it were like, well, that's how you got to take the trash out. You just got to put one for the other. And why wouldn't I cut it? It was unconscionable. That gave me chills too.
The third part doesn't actually have anything to do with Robert, but has to do with Susan Berman's stepson. Was when he finds the letter and he calls Andrew Jarecki and says, "I need a reality check. Please come over here. I need to talk to you." And when he's standing there showing him the letter, Robert brings the cadaver letter with him to put them up against each other. And that moment, the look on Susan's son's face, who had been, Bob had given money to go to college for a year.
That had been going to dinner with him.
That had been, even during the filming of this, he was like, Bob didn't do this. I just don't see it. People have said that I've never seen it. And then to be like, well, obviously I was completely wrong. And this man has been staring me dead in my face for all of these years. And he killed my mother.
Go ahead. You're talking about they showed the juror in Galveston that basically voted to get to let Bob off from dismembering his neighbor. And he was just, I think he's, you know, I said before, he's the most unluckiest man in the world, but he is not guilty. I know he didn't kill that man in Galveston and these other murders and missing his wife. It's a witch hunt. They're coming after him.
No, there's been a lot of things. I think that, you know, the thing that is the most egregious to me, obviously other than him being a serial killer, is the way in which the family knew that he was a killer and chose to, one, distance themselves from him, but also openly acknowledge that they
protect him.
Not just protect him, but protect themselves from him physically. Mm. His brother gets a bodyguard. They have protective orders against him. Why would you do that against your brother if you don't think that he's a killer?
Yeah.
If you are not afraid of what he may or may not do. So to me, there's two deaths after his wife's death that they clearly knew what was going on. And not to mention, I'm sorry to say, but sociopaths aren't made in a day.
Well, and there's we talked earlier a little bit about the, you know, individual that I knew growing up in.
What really happened with his mother?
Robert
Durst's mother.
Yeah.
He claims she committed suicide and he stood there and watched
it.
Who was there to dispute his recollection of the incident? His father is dead. His mother is dead. And he's the only one in this scenario that has killed multiple people.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, so to the point about the people, defending him or saying, you know, in his life that, you know, his family were protecting themselves, but they were also kind of like, you know, they weren't flushing him down the toilet. They weren't like calling the cops trying to get him
They
in trouble.
Weren't, no.
And well, to that point, and again, there's a lot of similarities when I say sociopath. So I knew a sociopath,
yes.
Dave Biro, right? Like he's a killer.
And also a serial killer.
Killed Richard and Nancy Langer, went to high school with him and was friends with him. Like we would, you know, play, like he was a good friend of mine. And when I say like knew him, like I knew him too well, like to the point that like, you know, I may have inadvertently seen and held the murder weapon. Like, literally, like, knew this person very, very well.
Yes, been in each other's homes.
Yeah.
I mean, you were friends. This wasn't an acquaintance.
Not at all.
Just to be clear.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And he's a murderer. And he's in jail the rest of his life. And in hindsight, you're like, oh my God, of course, all this other stuff kind of like adds up, it fits together.
Yeah.
But in the same, so the two things that are very, very similar is that, that Dave basically got away with Richard and Nancy's murder. He right. literally got away with it. They had no clue and was only caught because he confessed to a friend of his in this sort of like, under the guise of, I've committed this perfect murder, but nobody knows I've committed it, so it's not really a value and merit and worth. And if somebody does know about it, it's no longer this perfect murder. I get caught. But, like, it's necessary. Like if a tree falls in the wood and nobody hears it, did it really fall kind of thing. And Durst did the exact same fucking thing. That he was done and clear, and nobody was coming after him, and these murders were just going to be unsolved. And he fucking was like, nope, you got to hear my side of the story.
Well, he saw the movie.
He saw the movie.
He saw the movie, and he was like, ooh, he because I watched the movie. I don't know if you've seen it. I've seen the movie previously.
With, is it Gosling or
Yeah, Gosling and Kirsten Dunst. And in the movie, you know, he comes off as a sympathetic individual in the movie. And so I can imagine him all of these years, everybody's saying he's horrible. Everybody's saying he's the worst thing. And here's Andrew Jarecki, who saw his story and thought, this is what I got from Bob Durst, was this human being who has been wronged and who has been misunderstood and all of these other things. And the movie left things very ambiguous as well.
It did.
And I think that that really spoke to Bob. He thought, haha, I can... He's like, I want to talk about these things, and I thought maybe you're the only one I can talk
to. He even said, I've been wanting to get this out there and work with somebody, and I think
you
can tell my story.
Yeah, I think you're the one.
He picked him. He picked him based on the movie he did. Yeah. Well, the other corollary.
And they have that clip from the first episode where Jarecki's saying, you know, I really would like Bob Durst to see my movie and like it.
Yeah.
Remember that
clip? What would he want? What would Bob Durst
to be like,
happy?
Junket, like on the red carpet.
Yeah.
He says this. So the other thing that that was incredibly masterful, and of course, this is not something that Andrew Jarecki could have known ahead of time, because who knew that this second letter was going to come into play?
For real.
But he pressed him on the cadaver letter very heavily.
Yeah, when Susan
originally,
Berman's death.
He pressed him on why somebody would write it.
Yeah,
why they would have written it the way that they wrote it. What conclusions would you draw?
They got Bob
himself
Bob on record.
Saying, "Well, obviously, the person who wrote it killed her."
Yeah, and then said, why would you go out and do something so risky as to send a letter to the police? It's very foolish.
It's very foolish.
Yeah. Jarecki did that,
you know,
without even knowing how critical it was
going to be in the pieces of the puzzle.
Fuck.
So this brings us to this final episode tonight, and
I wanted to say the last piece about Gabriel. With the family. Oh, yeah. So Dave got institutionalized, and they said don't let him out. He got in all sorts of trouble, and he left, and he walked out, and it was a sort of like, you know, okay, do the parents send him back? What should they do? And they elected not to. They elected to say, okay, we'll let you stay at home. We rather than the doctors who have said, no, you shouldn't go home, we think we know what's best for our son, and we're going to let you come back home. And a couple of murders later, they were held, you know, like significantly accountable in a liability lawsuit because of that.
And I might charge the Durst Foundation with the same acts. Not that say that they should have locked him up, but you know, to me, there's a bit of culpability here.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that in both cases, it's, you know, once again, an astounding display of white privilege.
Oh, you know who I think should be, and I hate to say it like this, if I was one of those 12 jurors, you should be fucking sick to your stomach.
Disgusted.
Just
yourself.
If you were the lawyer that got $1.8 million.
Now, the only thing I will say is at least that was the last murder. Because if Susan had been murdered after his neighbor,
for real.
That's a death at your hands.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the... Are we going to spoil alert?
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you didn't watch the show, don't listen from here forward. Go stop this.
Well, we all know we got arrested.
Watch it. We know he got arrested, but that's hardly the biggest thing in the last episode. So the last episode centers directly around them cornering Bob Durst to, first of all, actually get him to sit down and have this final interview. I won't say or go into the details of how they are able to have enough leverage to force that situation.
Yeah,
but
even
they
that
are
was,
able
I,
to
we
do
didn't
that.
Even talk about that. It was crazy that how that almost like. Not that it fell in their lap, but it was
No, Drew, listen to me. Bob wants to do harm to his brother. Let me tell you something.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
He really wants to
There's a reason he's got security.
Those people did not react because Andrew Jarecki was there.
No,
outside you're right. that building.
That was the. It was a different time that they called the police.
I'm just saying, generally speaking. No, I hear you. That hear reaction. You. The reaction was
when
nothing.
He came alone.
It was what? No, I'm saying that.
You didn't get that though. That was a second time.
Yes,
that,
I know it was a second time. My point is that the reaction on the part of the Durst Foundation and their security was not because of the cameras or because
of
Andrew
Dreyfus.
No, it's because of Bob.
Oh yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
You know that,
they weren't even. They didn't give a shit about the cameras.
They didn't care.
Get Bob out of here.
Yes.
Yeah. They have a Bob is not allowed on this property.
Yeah.
Period. And I think they know why. And that's almost an admission of their
And I just still can't. My sister works in that building.
Should the foundation be tarnished for this? I don't know. But the fact that they were able to, Jarecki was able to get the leverage to get that interview, incredible. And then to have it and to
reach
that moment.
Then, of course, they spend a significant amount of time deciding how they're going to do this, conduct this interview. They have this bombshell of evidence. They have had a handwriting analysis, and it's the same person that wrote both letters. It's impossible to other conclusion.
And they went
draw.
Further. It wasn't just the two letters. They compared it to
they did a full,
known Robert Durst, like a lease document, all kinds of.
They did
known,
full handwriting analysis and included those pieces of documents included in the analysis that was taken. So
correct.
It was not just these two things compared to each other. It was those two things in conjunction with many, many known handwriting samples from Robert Durst on applications, on tax forms, all sorts
correct.
Of things. Okay. So they go in, they know. And of course, Jarecki says, quite frankly, to the camera, he's like, I went into this thinking Bob maybe didn't do this. And he's like, and now I know the exact opposite to be true.
Yeah.
And so I think for him, in between the previous time they'd spoken this last time, he's done himself a 180. And so now I can only imagine mentally all these other times you've gone to speak with him, you've given him this benefit and he's lost this benefit with you now. So now you have to not tip your hand to him and let him know he's lost this benefit. He still has to feel comfortable because if he doesn't, you're never going to get what he gets. You can't go into it with him already being like, oh, Andrew's treating me differently.
He's like you said, he's a sociopath, and they're
and
frequently,
a smart one.
Frequently brilliant.
Yes.
And more than brilliant, he kind of almost got tipped off to what he thought Jarecki was doing with this sort of like, you know, I'm going to be getting in this last interview sort of thing. He was already squirrely. Like, they had to use some leverage to get this last interview. So
they
it was
were,
very...
He was squirrely, and I think he was squirrely in the... He thought that maybe now Andrew didn't believe him. I don't think he thought Andrew had proof of anything.
No, you're right.
I
he was
think
squirrely.
He went into
his
it
spider
thinking,
sense was tingling, but his, for the wrong
right,
reason.
His, he seemed to have this idea that, like, you know what? I think Bob's looked at everything, or Andrew's looked at everything.
He doesn't believe
and
me.
He doesn't believe me anymore. And now I don't want to sit down and talk with him. It's not going to be fun.
His spider sense was telling him this might go wrong. It wasn't telling him this is going to go nuclear and I'm getting arrested for murder.
So they sit down for the interview. And Andrew starts, as they planned, pictures going through. Where did you take this picture? How about this one? And he pulls out the letter that was the newly discovered letter. And it's handwritten, and it says, you know, Susie, I remember the good day, the good old day, or the fun times. Good luck, Bob Durst. Did you write this letter? Is this letterhead correct? Is that where your office was? Yes. After I left the family business, I moved my office downtown. This is where my office was. I don't remember writing that letter, but I could see me writing that. Maybe she was doing something. You know, she got
a
project
I put
off the ground. No. Bob pushed that forward. He goes, maybe with a check, could you have sent it? And Bob immediately, oh, yeah, yes, I could totally, yes, I could definitely see me writing that and sending a check off to her just like that. Yes, definitely, definitely. Now he pulls the envelope. This is the envelope it came in. You want to read that off? Reads off the address. Says Beverly's wrong.
Spelled wrong.
Spelled wrong. Right there is the break.
Yeah, he literally, there's a moment where he says that, he pauses,
yes.
He turns his head, and you see the wheels spinning. There's a almost like you could, I swear to God, if the camera were closer and more HD, you could see the sweat glands on his forehead pop open.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, there
was
a moment of
clarity.
It was
clarity. A whole, like, his whole being shifted
changed.
In that
moment.
Yeah,
his aura. I mean, really was
he
like.
He burped.
No, he touched his head.
He touched his head immediately. Which has been his tell his from tell. The get-go. He touched his head immediately.
And the burping didn't happen until
the second letter came in.
No, until the envelope. He couldn't determine which one he wrote, the linchpin at the end.
So then, go ahead. You can tell the second part.
So he says, is this your handwriting? Yes, yes. Miss Paul Beverly, yes, yes. Here's the cadaver letter. Oh, okay. What do you notice? And right away, you know, Bob didn't vacillate. He goes, well, it's also spelled incorrectly and looks like similar block. And his tactic was, it's block lettering. And if you had a typewriter, it would look very similar, but it doesn't mean it's the same typewriter. It's just somebody doing block lettering and they made the same spelling mistake.
What else is block lettering going to look like?
What else is block lettering going to look like? So they're doing that. And I, again, credit to Jarecki.
Jarecki said for Tim Firth, did you write the cadaver letter? No, I didn't.
Yeah, he gets some
points. But you wrote this one. Yes, I did. I definitely wrote this one. I definitely didn't write that one.
So then he takes the two, and they're blown up and sort of just this address line that was from the cadaver envelope. And again, he just said, I wrote this one. I didn't write the cadaver one. Jarecki holds him up and says, can you tell me which of these you didn't write? Couldn't do it.
He couldn't. He said no.
Couldn't do it.
He says no.
And as soon as he says no,
like he's about to throw up.
I mean, like
immediately,
like so uncomfortable.
Physically, you can see it. Jarecki says, "Okay, you know, they pack up. They start packing everything up, and Bob." He says he wants a sandwich, and Jarecki's like, well, pack it up for him to go, you know, tell him to go. Because, you know, you could see in that moment, especially because he had the physical reaction.
They're trying to make small talk.
No, not just that they're trying to make small talk, but Bob is like, they know. They know I know they know.
Yeah.
That's what that moment was.
Uncomfortableness. We're all standing around with somebody who knows we all know that he knows that we know that he's a fucking serial killer, a murderer. Yeah.
Okay. So
multiple murder.
He goes in the bathroom.
Well, listen, just for a second, you're going to say his mic was on. He did that again. How do you do that a second time? Because he did the knowingly, willingly lying thing with the mic. What a fool!
So he goes into the bathroom and he starts talking to himself.
You're being polite there, babe. There was like three. There was like multiple personality, like weirdness talking
to
himself.
They've got you. You're caught, he says. Another voice, still Bob, says. This is what I've wanted.
This is what you know. This is what he wanted.
No, this is what I wanted. That's what he said.
But there was a he. He kept referring to a he. He said,
he kept saying I in each of these things, but he said he a couple of other times, but not that time. He's like, this is what I wanted.
So they're rolling you're hearing his voice and it's whispering to himself, like kind of weird. And he's in a bathroom, so it's got a kind of almost like an eerie echo to it. And they're giving you the transcript so you're not unclear. But the scene has slowly faded to black because he's in a bathroom. They don't have a camera there. Or it's the same
room,
place they were doing the interview in.
But the day is going.
Yes, it's fading slowly.
They're turning the lights off.
they're, you know, doing their job. And he says, what did I just do? What did I just do? Like maybe two or three times. What did I just do? And then
he says, well, I killed them all.
Oh, man. What did I just do? And it was like, when I say it was multiple personality disorder, it sounded like a different fucking voice.
Yeah, it was really. I'm creeped out right now talking about it.
What did I just do?
Well, I killed them all.
I killed them all. Oh, my God.
So, kudos, Andrew Jarecki. I'm going to just pull up whatever the latest news on it is right now really quick. I cannot say enough about
Robert. Can you imagine going into the project and thinking your highest of hopes, what you might achieve with doing this, and having this be the outcome? Oh, creepy, man. I don't think he should feel bad about it, right? First called
36
him.
36 minutes ago, New York Times. On HBO's The Jinx, Robert Durst says he killed them all. Since his first wife vanished more than three decades ago, Robert A. Durst, the eccentric and estranged son of one of New York's most prominent real estate dynasties, has lived under the suspicious gaze of law enforcement officials in three states. They followed his path from New York City to Los Angeles, where one of his closest friends was found dead in her home in 2000. They tracked him to Galveston, Texas, where he fled after investigators reopened the case of his wife's disappearance and where he posed as a mute woman and shot and dismembered a neighbor in 2001. He was acquitted of the Texas killing and never arrested in either of the other two deaths. But on Saturday, he found himself in custody custody once again, arrested on a charge of murder as he walked into a New Orleans hotel he had checked into under a false name. On Sunday night, in the final moments of the final episode of a six-part HBO documentary about him, Mr. Durst seemed to veer toward a confession that could lift the shroud of mystery that surrounds the deaths of three people over the course of three decades. Quote, "What the hell did I just do?" Mr. Durst whispers to himself in an unguarded moment caught on the microphone he wore during filming. Killed them all, of course. End quote.
What the hell did I just do? Killed them all, of course.
In the years since his wife, Kathleen Durst, disappeared in 1982 after spending the weekend at the couple's home in Westchester County, Mr. Durst has bounced in and out of jail for other crimes, cut ties with his family, remarried, and sued his brother for a $65 million share of the family fortune. Through it all, he has maintained his innocence in the disappearance of his wife while also denying any role in the 2000 death of his Los Angeles friend, Susan Berman. His arrest on Saturday at a Marriott on Canal Street in New Orleans was in connection with Ms. Berman's death. Though the Westchester authorities said they are still investigating him and his wife's case, Mr. Durst was walking toward an elevator and mumbling to himself when FBI agents intercepted him at the hotel. A law enforcement official briefed on the investigation said he had checked in under the name Everett Ward, not the first time he has used an alias. Mr. Durst is believed to have left Houston in a Toyota Camry on March 10th, headed for New Orleans. Investigators involved in the case said they feared that the renewed attention brought by the jinx would lead him to try to flee the country. Mr. Durst will plead not guilty, said one of his lawyers, Dick DeGuerin, who helped win Mr. Durst's acquittal in Galveston in 2003 and who said he expects to head Durst's defense team in Los Angeles. The rumors have been flying for years. Now they'll get tested in court, his lawyer said. As he watched the documentary Sunday night with the filmmakers, James McCormick, the brother of Kathleen Durst, said, "Closure is near at hand. I feel it in my heart." It was Mr. Durst himself who may have set the latest twist in the bizarre saga in motion. Los Angeles prosecutors reopened their investigation into Ms. Berman's execution-style murder only after Mr. Durst agreed to a series of interviews with the producers of The Jinx, Andrew Jarecki and Mark Smerling. The amount of press coverage Mr. Durst has generated is topped only by the volume of work he has made for his lawyers and police investigators in Westchester, Los Angeles, Galveston, and beyond. Yet he had rebuffed overtures from journalists until he saw All Good Things, a lightly fictionized film the producers had previously made of his life in 2010, and approached them to tell his story. "I will be able to tell it my way," he said in the second episode of The Jinx.
And that's that sociopathic thing that he just had. He couldn't fucking just, like, he got away with triple murder.
They have a
he admitted it.
They have a quote from Janine Pirro. "These two producers did what law enforcement in three states could not do in 30 years. Kudos to them. They were meticulous. They were focused. They were clear." The filmmakers spent nearly 10 years researching Mr. Durst's story, his upbringing as the eldest son of the family that controls 11 major skyscrapers in New York, his marriage to Durst, a medical student, and his unraveling, his estrangement from his family after his father chose his younger brother Douglas to run the business in 1994. "We are so relieved and also grateful to everyone who assisted in the arrest of Robert Durst," Douglas Durst said in a statement on Sunday. "We hope he will finally be held accountable for all that he has done," end quote.
Relieved was the first word.
Relieved, are you now, Douglas?
Relieved, Douglas. Well, you heard it on here first, Johnners. We was on the fucking life and death of Durst from Jump Street. When we started talking, what's playing there? Is that me?
That's you.
Life and Death of Robert Durst. We were talking about it from get-go because it was a good show and we could see that it was going to be a good show. I had no fucking clue that this is where the conclusion was going to come.
Hold on a second, Drew. In the final episode of Forensic Document Examiner, the filmmakers asked to analyze Mr. Durst's handwriting concluded that the ticks in the notes' handwriting are unique to one person and only one person. Mr. Jarecki and Mr. Smerling struggled with whether to bring the letter to law enforcement authorities. If they did it too soon, their lawyers told them they could be considered law enforcement agents in the event of a prosecution, possibly jeopardizing the material's admissibility in court, Mr. Jarecki said. They also wanted to preserve a journalistic privilege not to disclose sources or testify in court. Still, Mr. Smerling said in an interview, quote, "We had a moral obligation and an obligation to the families of the dead to see that justice was done. The began speaking to Los Angeles investigators in early 2013 near the documentary's end. The filmmakers were packing up their equipment when Mr. Durst asked to use the bathroom. He did not remove his wireless microphone as he closed the door, however, and began to whisper to himself. More than 2 years passed before the interview, after the interview, before the filmmakers found the audio.
What? So this film was done 2 years ago?
Yes, the interviewing. Mr. Durst's private monologue makes for good television, but it is unclear whether the recording of his comments could be used in court, some legal experts said, since they were made in a bathroom when he was alone and had an expectation of privacy. That's pretty damning stuff. The question is it admissible in court? So they didn't even arrest him because of that. 2 years they were sitting on that? Can you imagine when they found it? Oh my God.
Fuck.
Oh my God.
Now, wait a minute. So they had all these interviews. They had this handwriting analysis.
Well, they said they started talking to investigators in 2013.
And I will give very, very, very much credit to them in their approach to it. It was clear that although Robert was the subject of the film, they were journalistically attempting to be independent. And priority one was making sure that they didn't corrupt anything in the ability to have justice served. That if they did uncover things, that they were going to do it in such a way that it could be used in court. And they really went, I would say, above and beyond to make sure that that wasn't problematic. They could have done things to get better shots, better ratings, better whatever, and been like, well, fuck justice. This is for our TV show. And they didn't do that. And it was still an amazing TV show.
Insane.
I can't get over it. You know, what the hell did I just do? Kill them all, of course. Oh, and then they just fade to black. And they played that creepy music.
Oh, my gosh.
Fucking just sometimes real life, you can't script that shit. You just can't. You couldn't script that because it's – and I do think he has a mental disorder. I don't know if it's multiple personality disorder, sociopath. There's clearly a break, but – I loved it. I thought it was one of the... And that'd be a great thing to binge watch. I know we've already just spoiled it, but you could watch all six of those and still enjoy the shit out of it. Don't you think?
No, for sure. I mean, I might want to watch them again. I'm just saying.
Yeah. All right. Did you want to talk about anything else?
No.
Lame duck blackness?
I don't even want to talk about anything else except for
just
that.
And you know what? And now it is going to be the life and deaths. And it's just, you know... And they named it the Jinx.
The Jinx.
Man. And his lawyer even said, you know, you should just be out in the field, you know, out on the pasture, enjoying yourself. You know, no one's bothering you. And, you know, if you do this, you're likely to piss somebody off that doesn't have your liberty and freedom at mind. And he was dead right. Dead right. Because I'm not saying that it was the confession. It was the letter that was from 2013. But if Durst hadn't called Jarecki, none of that would have come to light. Right? Susan's son wasn't looking for a box full of fucking letters.
Nope.
And even if Susan's son had found a box full of letters, he wouldn't have known about the cadaver letter because they wouldn't have been doing the fucking goddamn movie.
They wouldn't have been doing the documentary.
The son wouldn't have known about it. He would have said, oh, here's a letter that he wrote to my mom. Big whoop.
Big deal.
Big fucking deal.
Who cares? Yeah, you're definitely right about that.
My God.
I just... Oof.
Killed them all, of course. God, it's just... That's... I don't say it's haunting... But they filmed that in 2013. Hats off, HBO. Hats
honestly
off.
Wow. I just oof.
Yeah, it was heavy.
Heavy, heavy, very heavy.
All right,
good night, everybody.
High five.